There you go. We still got a couple of minutes, so relax in your space. Enjoy the company of fellow beings who are on the same search. Just about getting ready. Well, thanks for getting the door, Margo. Thanks for getting the door. Okay. We could just take a moment to align ourselves to the energy of growth, stretching. Let go of our minds for a moment. Our process of thinking, our process of thought, and allow ourselves to be as open as we possibly can be to what we might call a higher realities, what's sometimes referred to in these books as the upper room, Christ consciousness. And to know that's not a denial of our lower consciousness. It's simply the realization that lower consciousness is just that. Still part of our trip, but it's not the essential nature of who we are. So it's sort of like we show up on Sunday mornings. It's a come as you are party. Just where you happen to be in your life. And bring that with you, bring that with us. And we all kind of drop our earthly disguises and let ourselves just be. I'm going to begin on page 4, which I know is overlapping a little bit, but since we missed last Sunday, I'd like to be able to kind of link things up. Good morning. Towards the end of the first paragraph on page 4. We're going to be talking this morning basically about manifestation and how that works. My first introduction to manifestation happened, I'm trying to think, 67, 78. Probably around 1978. And I remember I ran into one of my first metaphysical teachers, and he was Michael Johnson. He was teaching a non-credited course at University of Indiana, Purdue. And I remember him saying, he said, the way manifestation works is, he said, this will happen one of these days. He said, if I want an apple, I'll be able to put my hand out and say, apple, and there'll be an apple. He said, I'm not there yet. He said, look, the way manifestation works for me now is I say, apple, and then I have to get in my car and go to the grocery store and find an apple on the counter. But I'm still manifesting it. It's just taking any number of different steps that I think I need to take in order to be able to get there. See, my mind is kind of a hindrance here. It says, oh no, you can't do that. The only way you can manifest having an apple is by going to the grocery store. Whereas the truth of the matter is, I could manifest if I really, if you believe, Jesus said, I could say to that mountain, get up and walk, and it would. If your faith were the size of a mustard seed, you could say, get up to that mountain and walk, and it worked. So then I have to wonder, where's my faith at? What we're doing here, I believe, this morning is attempting to look at this whole idea of manifestation and cut down the number of steps that we think we have to go through in order to be able to make it happen. And that's just not manifestation in the physical world. That's the lightest, smallest. So the book says, prayer, if you wish to know, is agreement to the source, alignment to the source. So if I was perfectly aligned to the source, I could say apple and the apple would appear. There would be no doubt in my mind. But if your prayers are fearful, please, God, give me what I need. I need it so badly. You are confirming lack and agreeing to lack because source, you must understand, is present in all things, even your idea of lack. Now, I must intrude on this a moment because sometimes the prayers I've said in desperation have been the most honest prayers of my life. I know, especially back in my alcohol practicing before recovery, that there are many, many times when I would say, God, please get me out of this. And I really meant that. I said, I would say, please, God, get me, and I'll never do it again. And I really meant that too. We will explain this for Paul, who is questioning. As you are creators, yes, you hold principles that are agreed to by the frequency that you claim to you. If that's lack or scarcity, there will not be enough, a claim of scarcity will, of course, be met by you because that is something you may choose to experience, or better said, expect to experience. When something is an expectation, it is framed as a potential. And when the purpose of the frame is to claim the thing in manifestation. Now you are not thinking your way to heaven, not the Tower of Babel. Remember that story in the Old Testament? About the, actually, it was interesting, building a stairway to heaven. That's what they were attempting to do. And they got, it was metaphorically, it was trying to capture a spiritual principle through lower consciousness. Is trying to capture higher consciousness through lower consciousness, and didn't work. Fell apart. Of course, it didn't work here either. Yes, I'm.
What's the difference between knowing and having faith, and being overcome, you know, and saying, "Oh, I know my stocks will go. I know the deal." And then it falls.
The question was, what's the difference between faith and knowing? And what else did you add to that, Sanghi?
Overconfidence.
My impression is that faith is a way of knowing. It's not one we claim too often, but there are various ways of knowing. I can know something through my five senses. I can know something through my intellect, through intellectual proof, mathematical proof. I can know something through my intuition. I can walk into a room where everybody looks happy and I know that's not the truth. Something going on, and my gut tells me that. I can know things through faith, which goes beyond my thinking, goes beyond my thinking mind, and yet is still just as, it's just as real a knowing as it would be with my five senses. Different kind of knowing, but there. How does overconfidence play a role in that?
First, like you said, oh, of course my stocks will go up. I invest. And they have no doubt at all. And they're almost arrogant about it. Right?
Okay.
And then the stock market falls.
There is a story in the Gospels, one of my favorite stories, about a Roman centurion who went up to Jesus and asked him to cure his if he would cure his servant. And Jesus replied, "Where do you live?" In other words, show me and I'll do it. This particular story has many different layers to it, but what the centurion said was, "Lord, I am not worthy that thou should enter under my roof, but only say the word, my servant shall be healed." And what he was saying essentially was, I don't want to bother you. I know you can perform this miracle if you're 5 miles away. You don't have to be in my same room. So I have no doubt. Jesus went on to say, do you believe I can do this? Cure your servant. And the centurion said, yes, Lord, I believe. Help thou my unbelief. In other words, right now I believe as much as I possibly can be, but there's still part of me that remains in doubt. And Jesus said, I have not found such greater faith in all of Israel. In other words, I'm not condemning you for your lack of belief. I'm reinforcing my gratitude for your belief, even though it's not complete, even though it's not perfect. And I find myself in that place quite often. Lord, I believe, help thou my unbelief. And again, you could probably look at the Bhagavad Gita as being a whole story doing the same thing. Every encounter is, Lord, I believe, help thou my unbelief. Now, you are not thinking your way to heaven. You are not pretending there is enough when the table is bare. You are moving to a level of alignment and manifestation, we would suggest, where your requirements are met by presence and being. In other words, here's where I'm kind of on shaky ground here, which I don't mind sharing with you. Lord, I believe, help thou my unbelief. I don't perceive myself as being in a place of, let's say, higher level manifestation. I would love to be able to be that person who would say apple and have the apple appear. I don't perceive myself as having that strength of faith, having that strength of belief. But see, my perception is not the truth either. My perception is just merely the way I'm looking at myself right now in a limited way. If I could see myself as I truly am, if I could see you as you truly are, if I could see myself without doubt, without any level of limited perception getting in the way, I would see the truth of who I am. And I would have no problem at all holding my hand and saying apple, and there would be one. I don't perceive myself as being that. See, that's my level of work. Getting past what I think is my perception of self to the reality of self with a capital S.
Jerry.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking a few things here that I think are related. One is Edgar Cayce saying mind is the builder. And if I understand that, what we think can become a reality if we think it often enough. I'm thinking about Joel Osteen, who's built his entire ministry on this whole idea of thinking positively and expecting grace and peace and joy and all the things that we want. I'm thinking of A Course in Miracles, where I think it's in chapter 2. It talks about thinking actually does create, and that we can't get some of the blessings we want because we're thinking in ways that are not in alignment with that. So anyway, those are just some thoughts I'd had. Thanks.
Thanks, John. You are moving to a level of alignment and manifestation, we would suggest, where your requirements are met by presence and being. By being, the words they used before, by being aligned to the source. It's not the little I that's doing this. It's the I that is an aspect of divine consciousness. See, and that's a whole other bag. Manifestation, there are essentially two different kinds of manifestation. One is the manifestation of something in the material world, something that did not exist before. The apple wasn't there yet. But the other kind of manifestation is uncovering what is already there. So you're not trying to manifest the divine self. You're not trying to manifest the divine consciousness. It's already here. But it's being able to accept and align yourself to that reality that is already present that is, I find, challenging to me. The book goes on to say, the idealization of things has become a great problem here. The way the Dalai Lama put it so beautifully, he said, your problem in the Western world is you try to solve spiritual problems with material gains. He said, you still haven't discovered that that doesn't work. The idealization of things has become a great problem here. I want a candelabra. It must fit on the table as such. And the candles must be beeswax or nothing other. Thank you, my order is in. You looked at God as a catalog. This is a great image. You looked at God as a catalog that you must be ordering from. How many times have we done that one?
Hey, Jerry?
Yeah.
Oh, good. I'm losing a different computer. You can hear me, so that's good. What I wanted to share is in terms of where we've kind of put our worth in, and just and the materiality of this human incarnation that we're in. And what comes to mind is that at times, some of us measure our self-worth by our net worth.
Thank you, Jimmy. I like that. Measure our self-worth by our net worth. My bank account. Or some other material measurement. You've looked at God as a catalog that you must be ordering from. God is the big Amazon in the sky. You've looked at God as a catalog that you must be ordering from. Instead of understanding that the perfect table is laid for you by your agreement to God or Source or the one-note sum. It's a mystery. We're trying to manifest something that's already there. When you understand that tone, alignment in tone, and agreement in tone is the action you are taking now, you will put away the ideas of what should be and allow what can be and what will be to be made present for you. I think I know what I need. How often has that been a mistaken notion? So my prayer today so often is, Lord, help me to realize that I already have what I need. And help me to realize what form that is going to be manifest in. I think about this often when think about Margot, my wife. I was not looking for somebody. I didn't think I was. I was not looking for a relationship. I didn't think I was. And yet all of a sudden, it took a while more than all of a sudden, but after a short amount of time, human beings speak. I found somebody in my life that I couldn't live without. Or wonder actually what it would be like if we had never met. And I know I would be a lot less than I was or am today. So it's kind of interesting. You will put away the ideas of what should be and allow what can be and what will be made present for you.
Jerry?
Yes, Paul.
Sometimes I feel for my own sanity, if I think about if all of us could remember of the times needs have been met that we hadn't known previously we were going to need to begin with and had no planning, no thought of what we need, say like a one short account. When I was in eighth grade, I just very quickly had a ruptured appendix. And of course, I know nothing about what to do about that. And unfortunately, neither did my mother. I just had this terrible stomach ache that grew immensely.
Mm-hmm.
And so my thought isn't, no one's thought, even hers or whatever, like, you're not going, okay, now what do I need right now? I mean, we didn't even know what's wrong. And yet my aunt came forth, called her gynecologist that she had worked for, and he rushed me and he came, and my stomach was like a 8-month-old pregnant woman, and rushed me into emergency. The thing was, there was a need. Even as an adult, we can't possibly know what event is going to transpire. And then that intelligence moves in and brings what is needed at that time. And to me, that is when remembering occasions like this helps build my faith that you were talking about. And knowing that our needs are met. And as it says in here, we're consumed with the material. So when we don't get something we feel we need, our faith is warped.
Mm-hmm. Or we might say, if we don't get something we think we need, we didn't really need it. I wonder what that would be like.
Jerry?
Yes, John.
So I'm remembering an experience in my life when I was pretty young. I think I was only maybe 8 to 10 years old. And I experienced great faith, but it was weird. I was with my grandfather. he had taken me to the local fair that would come through our small town once a year. And he loved to play bingo at the fair. And so he'd taken me on rides, but now I had to stand there behind him while he played bingo for a very, very long time. And I kind of went into a trance. I wasn't really paying attention to much. And I realized that the guy who was sitting next to him turned in his bingo card and got up to leave. And I couldn't understand that because that card was going to win on the next game. I knew that. I look at it now as a form of faith. I knew that card was going to win. I sat down next to Grandpa. I said, give me a, I don't know if it was a nickel or a dime or a quarter at that time. Wait, I want to play on that card. So he gave it to me. I got the card back from the guy who was holding the cards. I played and I won. And so, you know, I don't know that we can ever make that practical, purposeful, but I know that we can know what's going to happen, at least in the short time. Thanks.
Thanks, John.
Hey, Jerry.
Yeah.
So, which is interesting in terms of when you said, when you and Margo came together, I think about this in terms of relationships, that the human may not want this or that, but your soul knew what Jerry needed. And when that experience known as Margo came into your vibration, your soul immediately knew. And what you didn't do is push it away. You invited that, because here's the thing, what I'm thinking is that our soul always knows what's best for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree, Jim. It's just that we don't listen to it that often. Or don't listen to it enough. Again, I think I know what I need. But in prayer, my openness is, Lord, I think I know what I need, but you know better than I do. Or my divine consciousness knows better than I do. So please support me. Give me what I need, no matter whether I think it's true or not. And let me be aware of when and how it shows up in my life. Interesting, next paragraph. Manifestation is understood as getting what you want, and that is confusing for most of you. In fact, manifestation is all things, are all things, all in form, seen and unseen. The chair you sit in, the air you breathe, the sky and the clouds of what exists beyond them, are all manifestations of the divine. One is not higher than the other. How did the Course in Miracles? There's no degree in miracles. Each a flower blooming through a concrete street is just as powerful a miracle as seeing somebody as being a being of light. One is not higher than the other. The one note sung depicts itself as frequency, and the frequency in a solidified state, or what appears as solid, is what you would call manifest. The chair is of God, sky is of God, the cloud is of God, and all other things are of God as well. You could say the chair is your higher consciousness, the sky is higher consciousness, the cloud is higher consciousness, and all other things are also higher consciousness. Your decision that what must be of God must look a certain way, meet a certain expectation, is the point of confusion you hold. Even in your prayer, I'm praying that this might be manifest, or this need might be fixed or filled, and this is the way it's going to happen. So I'm focusing over here about the way I think it's supposed to happen, and the truth of it's happening over here someplace. Your decision of what must be of God must look a certain way, meet a certain expectation, is the point of confusion you hold. I would love to marry a man who has so much money and looks a certain way, wants what I want, prays as I pray, and chooses what I would want him to choose. That is not how love is found, or even how a mate is fully made. When you are open-hearted, I am willing to receive. When you are willing to know yourself as worthy of what you desire, there's a key element. Huge. It's almost like they skipped over that. They made it into a little piece of a sentence. When you are willing to know yourself as worthy of what you desire, goes back to that gospel story again. The centurion wasn't saying, "Oh Lord, I'm not worthy. There's something the matter with me." He said, "I don't want to bother you. You can perform this miracle from 5 miles away. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying there's something wrong with you or there's something wrong with me." So somehow or another, we took that "I'm not worthy" thing and blew that up into some real downer device, whereas it's not the truth at all. I am willing to receive. When you are willing to know yourself as worthy of what you desire, I am agreeing to love, and love will find you, yes, because it is you that is present for it. You are when you are present to love, love will find you. It cannot not happen. Love will find you, yes, because it is you that is present for it. Please stop seeking and begin allowing. Please stop seeking and surrender. Surrender what you think you need to being open to what it is you truly need. You are not allowing God to be God because you are so busy telling God what it should be. That's a great one-liner. You are not allowing God to be God because you are so busy telling God what it should be. Yeah, Sangi.
Whole paragraph. We spent so much time saying, "I want this," or praying for, "I want this job," or "this circumstance," or "this solution." I mean, doesn't that mean we're not in a loving relationship with God? We're always asking for something. What about just wanting a relationship with God? I don't read about that. What about nothing else? Mm-hmm. Whatever's happening in your life. What about just interacting with God just to say hi?
That's probably the goal, okay? This they would call it here aligning with the divine energy. But the way you're putting it is the way most mystics or spiritual writers would put it, is the ultimate of what we are looking for and what we desire. How did Augustine put it? "O Lord, you have made our hearts restless, and they will never rest until they rest in thee." That's the ultimate prayer. Let me rest in your love. Let me rest in your peace. Let me rest in your joy. So it's not even asking for peace, love, joy, right? Let me rest in the joy that encompasses my divine consciousness, my divine self.
About what God is. How can we keep asking for stuff when we're speaking that we're not willing to get to know?
Well, we're not willing to open ourselves to the truth of what is. Or something again. I need. Again, it gets into this a little bit further on. But the idea of asking for something is already presuming that I lack something. Whereas the truth of the matter is, when I am aligned to divine spirit, what else do I need? What else do I, the desire is, how can I put this? Desire is not there anymore. When I am truly in God's presence, when I'm truly in the presence of the divine, desire no longer exists. There's nowhere else to go. Please stop seeking and begin allowing. You are not allowing God to be God because you are so busy telling God what it should be. And when you don't get what you want, you deny God completely. The world that you express in is in denial of the divine. How do we know this is so? For quite obvious reasons. All of creation, all of the creations you have made that are operating as limited, are chosen by you through fear. And this would include war, include poverty, include famine. Our creations born in the denial of the divine, and they are your creations. The only way things change is by me accepting responsibility for what I'm creating.
Jerry?
Yes, Paul.
Could you briefly recount what Sanjay said? Because I didn't quite hear her, but what I did hear touched me.
I can put
about,
it in.
About why can't we, you know, be. Why are we always, I got the gist, always asking for something, always feeling we need something?
What if my only desire was God?
Yes. Okay. That's it. Yes.
Okay. I'm putting it real simply.
Yeah.
What if my own? And again, I like that quote from Augustine. Lord, you have made our hearts restless, and they will never rest until they rest in thee. There's nothing else. Don.
I have an issue that you guys have talked about. I didn't say it. But every morning I saw something. I'm working my being. I'm working body, energy. I know. And the first one, being. You know, at first I just thought, well, that means I'm just a drop of, you know, gotta put a drop of divine spirit in but me, you know. So, and I always said, well, that's interesting. We'll see what happens. But, so a being, if you take it as a man.
Okay, John, I need you to just speak up a little bit more.
Okay. Get it? Stupid. If I think of being as a verb, then it sort of takes a different life to it, different connotation. Being, you know, the intellect, I see, you know, every time I think, I'm always thinking, oh, I'm probably screwed. Because, you know, the intellect can't really feel, you know, what the heart feels. It tries to tell me what I'm thinking or what I'm feeling, really. It's never going to feel what my heart might be. So, if I'm saying word, I am word for my being, then I'm trying to align to the Holy Spirit, you know, that drop of the divine in me. And to feel it come through me and then work from that. And where I'm going to go and what I'm going to, you know, end up with, I don't know. That's where expectations come.
Mm-hmm.
But if I can open up my heart and come from that place, then I think that's a relationship with God,
mm-hmm.
with the divine being. So, and I see that as an active thing. It may be a state, you know,
right.
And it's a ooh-ah, you know, when I feel it working.
As you said, it's an active process, not passive.
Right. It's an act. Because to me, the word or whatever is like a growth. It's action. Energy.
Mm-hmm.
It's energy.
It's the energy of creation.
It's an energy of creation. And it's not a passive. It's very active. So.
Thank you. No, I appreciate that. I'm reminded of that little quote from Little Prince, where he says, "It is only with the heart that one sees rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye."
Yeah.
So thank you for reminding us.
Ooh-ah.
It is only with the heart that one sees rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye. Or go back to the somewhat overly simplistic, but I think powerful piece of wisdom, asking myself the question and making that distinction, does it open my heart or does it close my heart? And if I'm going out of my intellect, I'm not closing my heart on purpose, right? But essentially I am, because I'm denying, exactly, I'm putting it in a, putting creation in a box. Yeah.
Jerry.
Yeah, John.
How do you relate to God if we don't relate to creation? It seems like it's just abstract question. God seems very abstract.
Mm-hmm.
How does creation, creatures, enter into that?
Okay, good question. How does God, the idea of God sometimes can be rather abstract. How does the material world or nature fit into that? Is that what you're asking? One of the paradoxes of spiritual studies, spiritual life, is that this concept of God is kind of, in some ways, at least two different things. God is mystery, something that can be explained through the intellect or through the mind. And at the same time, God is also intimate. God is so present that you can't live without it. What this book is suggesting, and what many other spiritual authors would suggest, is that if we are awake enough, if we are aware enough, we can see God in anyone and everything. That's how it fits in. I can't explain how that's true, but I can explain, or I can say, I know that it is true. So that I can see God in a little baby. I can see God in a flower growing up through a sidewalk. I can, and if I'm really good at it, if I've really had a lot of practice in loving God and being, see, the other side of loving God is being loved by God. So how do I allow that to happen? If I'm really good at that, then I'm able to see through all the different disguises that people might be wearing. As Mother Teresa said, you know, my purpose in life is to see the Christ in all his distressing disguises. So if I'm open to it, I can see God in everyone and everything. It's not abstract at all. It's so present I can't describe it in any other way. But so often I am sleepwalking through life. I'm missing God in all of these various places and all of these various places, all of these various designs. I have to be aware enough, awake enough, to be able to see God or see God's presence. But see, that's another way of looking at it. There was a little book written in the Middle Ages by a monk by the name of Brother Lawrence. And it was called The Practice of the Presence of God. And essentially what that whole little book was all about was about finding God in everyone and everything and being aware of that. They describe one incident where he's down in the scullery in the kitchen making an omelet, probably for some fat monk upstairs, all right? And yet he's not thinking about, I'm making this omelet for, I am the presence of God, making the presence of God even more present through the hungry belly of the monk upstairs. I'm not judging that, I'm just looking at it just the way it is. I'm seeing God in everyone and everything. What would that be like?
I've been reading that little book again, Jerry. My daughter, one of my daughters gave it to me at Christmas time.
Cool.
Yeah,
it's a good one to pick up every once in a while.
Practicing the presence. It kind of goes with this little book by Emmett Fox. I carry it with me. It's just a folder, little booklet, The Golden Key. Just think about God.
Or as Emmett Fox wrote, a little treatise called The Golden Key.
That's what I just mentioned. The Golden Key.
Right. And essentially what it said was, no matter what you might be thinking that might be downer or low energy, change your thinking. Think about God any way you can. Think about the manifestation of the divine in any way you can. And when you do that, he said, things will change. They have to. See, it's almost time for us to do our meditation. Let me see if there's anything left in this paragraph here. Let me just do this one paragraph and then we'll do our meditation. When you decide where God is not, you embellish that idea. You concretize that idea, and you abandon God to that idea. You have made that idea, made manifest a totem or an idol, a thing that you can place before God. God cannot be in that dark place. God cannot be in that dark person. In your limitation of God, you have empowered that dark place, and your choice to deny God an act of will is in agreement to itself and is outpictured in consciousness and manifest. If you don't understand what we mean, you must understand that you have will. You may choose to see God, choose to limit God, or choose to deny God, and that will become your experience. You choose what you experience. That's your choice. What you don't understand yet is how you contribute to the manifest world through these things. When one denies the divine in herself, she has immediately denied the divine in all things. If God cannot be where you are, it cannot be anywhere. I'll probably begin with that paragraph next week. If God cannot be where you are, it cannot be anywhere. So I'm going to ask you to put your stuff down. Thank you all for your sharing this morning. You get comfortable in your spot. A couple of deep breaths. Close your eyes if you like. Suppose we made it a little bit more practical by saying, love is everywhere. And love can be found in any person, situation in life that might arise for us, because love is always there. What would it be like if I dedicated myself to finding love wherever I am? And let us take that with us this morning. What would it be like to find love no matter what the situation, no matter what the circumstance? How I can allow that energy to fill me up, to touch me, bless me. To make all things holy. No matter how small, no matter how minuscule, no matter how large, no matter how big. Let that be my question. How can I find love in this? And let me be open to the answer however it comes to me. Because if love is not everywhere, it cannot be love. There might be some life situations that we are in right now that will demand an answer to that. Might be having to do with your physical health. Might have to do with a relationship. Might have to do with some other kind of internal struggle. How can I find love in this? And how can I be open to that love that already exists? Deep breath. Stretch a bit. And open your eyes when you're ready. See you all. Have a great rest of the day.
Find you too. Again. Take care.
Bye-bye. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks to all.
Thank you, Gary. It was
You're
so
welcome.
Good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Powerful.
Thanks, Jerry.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.